Hi, I'm a journalist inquiring about disability insurance or life insurance. I am going into kind of a conflict zone by training to be a professional wrestler.
Wait, what?
It was a big part of my childhood, too.
Thank you for fulfilling my childhood dream.
That's cool. Thank you. Cool.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I'll be skating on your whole team. Young player, but I'm in the league. Been anticipated when I came in. We be winning when the game is.
Oh, they don't like short-term policies.
Joining us today on Moving Radio is a second timer. You know what that means? They get the free gift of being on the show for the second time. I'm sorry, Omar. It doesn't get much better than that. Omar Malouel is our guest today.
He's not even a t-shirt? A two-timer t-shirt?
There's something far, far back of CGSR in the basement of student services. I'm sure I can find something for you here. It could be.
That's the only reason I'm here. I don't do anything without compensation anymore.
I like that you have that fine line. You're at a level now where you
win one Rosie. You win one Rosie Award. And you're just a big shot now.
Yeah. You packed the Metro several times. And I'm a big shot, right? That's fair. You should feel that way. Omar, it's fantastic to have you back on the program again. I always love talking with you, whether it was to promote a film that you did that was on CBC Gem and then became a longer documentary, or whether it was talking to you at Northwest Fest. Today, we want to talk about Making Kayfabe. This is your brand new project that just launched recently on CBC Gem, and people can find it right now. They can stream it for free, or I guess if you get premium, you get no ads. But CBC Gem is the home of Making Kayfabe, and that's what we're here to talk about today. Look, last time it was Lebanese Burger Mafia, right? But now we're here talking about Making Kayfabe. Let's let the audience know about what this documentary is about. Because if you're smart, you know what kayfabe alludes to if you're into the wrestling terms.
Yeah, kayfabe is basically the honor code of professional wrestling. Used to be the honor code that kept audiences in the dark back in the Carney days. The origins of it are a little murky, but people think that it might have been Pig Latin for beefake. And this is sort of how wrestlers conducted business with each other and acted sort of, you know, took on these characters and upheld the illusion that wrestling and the storylines and the rivalries and all were real. Of course, everybody knows they're scripted now. So kayfabe is more of a concept of both the wrestlers and the audiences upholding the illusion. Where this all comes in is that I wanted to make a movie about kayfabe, about, you know, what it takes to be a professional wrestler, what, you know, how that sort of those characters are created, those rivalries are created and upheld. And I always feel like the best way to find out about, you know, the inside world of a place is to just jump in and be a part of it. And so I decided that I was going to train to be a professional wrestler. And this movie documents that.
Well, I think what's interesting about this too is that I don't know how long this had been some sort of secret yearning of yours, Omar, because I thought, yeah. You know, like you show the pictures of you as a kid and kind of like, you know, going to wrestling matches. You talk even for yourself when your dad took you and your brother to Edmonton to see a WWE show. And those are all experiences I think that a lot of us kind of share together. And then if you turn into, like, let's say, for example, maybe somebody like myself or yourself, you start to tell yourself, this is your soap opera. Like, these are your stories. Yes. And I kind of follow my stories. I can't watch all the time. But, like, now there's enough to me to kind of tell me those things. Like, what is it that attracts you specifically about wrestling? And then we'll kind of get into, like, what that connection is and how it works within the film. For me, I love the drama, and sometimes honestly, I love stick work. Somebody's good on the stick, almost better than a match. Sometimes I'm a super.
You still watch wrestling? Is this you still follow?
I am. I'm like,
that's great.
I'm not breaking up my schedule to make sure that I can watch 2 days of Mania back to back.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I'm into it. And I've
That's
dabbled
awesome.
in the indies. So I'm
That's
familiar
great.
With Love, which we'll get to
So
in a second.
So not only are you familiar with wrestling, but you're kind of familiar with this like bit of a renaissance that it's having right now, because wrestling has evolved quite a bit from my childhood when I kind of fell in love with it. Growing up in High Prairie, Alberta, once a year, Stampede Wrestling would come through town, and it was like the biggest show of the year. It's massive. Like, I don't know if it was actually massive, but in my head, it was like a world-class event. This was a moment when you would see these larger-than-life characters, and they would be acting out in these over-the-top ways. And it was just exciting and fun. And when you fall in love with something as a kid, it never really leaves your body. It never really leaves your soul. So even though I kind of fell out of wrestling as I got older, I think there was always this appreciation and this interest in it. And that part of me, that like childhood love of it, kind of sparked again when I became a parent. And especially like, you know, kind of during the pandemic, just like looking for something to do with my kids, to get out, something that was affordable, something that was kind of family friendly, though that's debatable. I take my kids to horror movies. So, you know, my tolerance level is a little bit, or their tolerance level actually is a little bit higher, but anyhow. And so I started going to these indie wrestling shows like Love Pro Wrestling, and Edmonton, people don't realize is kind of a, you know, it's kind of a hotbed for indie wrestling. We've got about five promotions, maybe six right now in a city of 1 million. That's actually quite a bit. That love of wrestling sparked again, but also this fascination with who these regular everyday people are who moonlight as wrestlers. And I just wanted to know who does this? What does it take to be a wrestler? And then of course, you know, what's the point of being a journalist if you can't leverage your credentials to pursue a childhood dream from time to time? So that's also what I was doing with this movie.
We're speaking on Zoom today with Omar Mallow, and we're discussing the film Making Kayfabe. It's on CBC Gem. You can check it out for free. It is completely worth your while and under an hour, friends. Unless, of course, there's some sort of sneaky plan for a future again, which you've done this before, Omar.
Yeah, this one's a tight 44.
I encourage people to go check this out. I mean, this will be a great conversation, but follow it up with the film. Like, just go for it. So now you talk a little bit about that kind of childhood and putting it in inserting it into maybe like this thing that you did with your children and kind of connecting in that way, because you kind of feel you're like those were amazing stories, and it was like an action movie come to life or comic book come to life, you know, in that ring specifically, right? And it's extremely accessible for us and to see it and to feel it. I think there's a certain level of energy, right, within the ring and within being in that audience. So for you,
yeah, I mean, I completely understand what you mean, and there's it's theater, right? Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of things. It's not quite theater, but it's also theater. Theater was not the most accessible thing for it's not the most accessible thing for most people, and especially when you're growing up in like a small sort of working class rural community, it's so wrestling was our theater for sure. And those stories, look, they're simple, they're black and white, but that's also kind of the charm of them, right? And they're always these good versus bad, you know, conflicts. And in every wrestling story, there is the moral order of the world is kind of confronted by some, you know, some violator of those rules, you know, the heel, of course. And so I think that, yeah, there is something actually kind of, you know, maybe a little bit more sophisticated than people give credit for in wrestling.
Yeah, and I would agree with you on that topic. And I think that you do a good job of showing that to the audience too, as you kind of work through it yourself. For you, you created this character that, like any, I think, good performer kind of roots within themselves, whether you're an actor, whether you're a wrestler, whatever you do in your life, right? Part of it has to be kind of coming from a genuine, honest place. So of course you play a reporter at this point. So
yeah.
Talk just a little bit about the character that you
yeah.
create for this 12-week journey going through Love Wrestling and for this documentary?
So I probably had the idea for this gimmick, my character, before I even had, you know, the whole concept for a movie, before I even had a proposal for it. Of course, I kept an open mind for whether the wrestling company that, you know, agreed to train me crazily to train me and let me fight in one of their matches, I was ready to keep an open mind in case they rejected it. And they almost did, because the character that I created and that I proposed, Fake News Neville, his gimmick is that he spreads misinformation about his opponents, his wrestlers. And obviously he's a heel, and he's smug, and he's, you know, he's smarmy. But in my original conception, he was also distinctly a left-wing journalist who was going to sort of antagonize not just wrestlers, but actually antagonize the audience even more, and antagonize them as if they are, you know, in his idiotic brain, all conspiracy, like far-right conspiracy, MAGA hat-wearing conservatives. Now, the joke is supposed to be on him because he's an idiot and he doesn't realize that this is just a stereotype of the wrestling fan. But when I pitched this, and you see it in the movie, this pitch meeting, this sort of artifice of kayfabe kind of bursted a little bit, because in my attempt to propose a smug elitist interloper of a character, I actually started to become seen as that smug interloper. And it gets really tense during that meeting. God, I mean, I wish I could show you the full 30 minutes of it. But for a while, I thought that, like, not only are they going to reject this character, but they're just going to reject me, and this whole premise of this movie is just going to fall apart right now. But like any good story editor, actually, Michael Richard Blaze, who is my trainer, he kind of took the spirit of what I was proposing in my character and kind of massaged it into something that worked for it. So instead of, you know, antagonizing the wrestling fans, I'm antagonizing him specifically and his tag team partner, Taryn from accounting. And so a storyline, a rivalry between us kind of forms from that. But there's like this tradition in wrestling where you create a persona that's slightly, like you said, rooted in yourself. And I was kind of glad I got to do that. I found it actually quite cathartic, you know, to play into that that stereotype of the lamestream media, the villainous journalist, the journalist that is becoming sort of more villainized every day in the zeitgeist.
Well, you know, the thing that you mentioned there was this idea about, you know, story editing with Blaze, who is incredibly helpful, not only for you within the ring performance wise, but also helps you kind of get the story straight so that the characters make sense, and knowing how to play the audience. And in a lot of ways, you know, you've been through things like that where you're like, well, I have to know what is the story that I'm telling, whether it's, you know, through film or through the books or the articles that you've written. Right. And it was fascinating to me to see that even though you were familiar with all that stuff, it took him and the other people that love to kind of pull you through that and to understand that that's storytelling in a different form as well. So I love that fascinating part of it, that I think you pulled back the curtain a little bit on that. And because this isn't a doc necessarily about love. Another thing that you kind of give up is something even about yourself. You're like, what are the perceptions of me? What are those things that I've kind of like, I feel have been projected on me? So that was interesting. You were willing to deal with that. And then the third layer is that you're dealing with the relationship within your family. And you talk about immediately at the very beginning where, you know, you kind of mentioned that you're recently separated. So there's a lot going on there. I talk about the layers of that, talk to me about how you figure out where you're going to put that focus. And maybe did it evolve from when you started at this project?
Yeah, it definitely evolved. I'm still a new filmmaker, but I think what I want to make is comedies with heart. And in the end, everything that I write, because I'm also an author as well. Anything I write, any movie I make, I want it to have a lot of heart. It can't just be for laughs. I want people to leave my movies in good spirits. I want them to have a great chuckle. But in the end, I need them to feel something uplifting, something heartening. Otherwise, to me, there's just no point. So, in this movie, it's not just about me undergoing the stunt. And it's not just about a teacher who's also a wrestler, or a policy analyst who's also a wrestler. It's about the challenges that they face in pursuing their passions. And, from the beginning, when I approached the subjects, Ahmed Khairy, who fights as T.Y. Jackson, Michael Richard Blaze, and Taryn Krall, who fights as Taryn from Accounting, I wanted this film to sort of offer sort of a look into their personal lives, kind of their private lives. And that was kind of the premise of this. And I didn't really, I suppose that I was also going to let the camera into my private life, but that was just, in my mind, it was just like me, a parent, a journalist. But something happened very early in the production of this film. Actually, it happened basically in the development of this film, which is that me and my wife separated very amicably, but we separated, and that was kind of unexpected. And I wasn't really sure at first whether I wanted to kind of put my private life on display the same way that I had planned to, and the same way that I was asking the other wrestlers to. But, I thought about it a little while. I discussed it with my ex, and I felt like if I'm asking my subjects to be sort of vulnerable and transparent about their private lives, I should do the same. And my ex was cool with that. But I think more than that, she saw the opportunity to contribute to, I think, the depiction of like a modern family, a healthy co-parenting relationship. Something that maybe you don't see very often in movies. You see a lot of, you see sort of more toxic divorces or and conflicts between co-parents, whereas, we even separated on very friendly terms. And I think we kind of wanted to showcase that a little bit, because we know a lot of other people who have very healthy, amicable co-parenting dynamics. And I think it was like a way to sort of like normalize it in a way, and set it as, I don't know, potentially something inspirational for people who might be going through something like that right now or in the near future. So it was a few things. And I think, the last thing too is I really believe in sort of leaving not so much a legacy for my kids, but just sort of like permanent records for my kids to understand who I am, because I don't have many from my parents, and I have almost none from my grandparents. And so it's something that I think a lot about, what I want to leave my kids. And I know it's just like a silly kind of wrestling movie, right? And I hope that they will adore my memory for that when I'm gone. But I also want them to see how their mom and I sort of managed this as best as we could, and as much of a benevolent and friendly kind of way. So yeah, there was a few reasons to sort of put it on display.
Our guest today on Moving Radio is Omar Malouel, and we're talking about his film Making Kayfabe. I almost said breaking.
That's Cadence Weapons' album.
I know. That's
a mess. This title is a tribute to that.
Breaking.
So.
Yeah, it's making. Either way, you'll still find both fantastic things, I would think, if you Google that. He's an author. He's a filmmaker. And he reminded me he's a Rosie Award winner. And I appreciate it when guests have all their stuff on the walls to help remind me. Digging in the Dirt is a film he did. Praying to the West is a book he did. It's all fantastic things. And I do love that on your bookshelf you have your FNN onesie on.
You can't see it. That's
and
good.
Your boots. Good. Yeah.
Good eye. Boots. Yeah, and my boots.
Right. You know, if you're really going to retire, you take them off in the ring.
That's right.
That's how you do it. Well, we're talking about the documentary film. One thing that I wanted to ask you about too is that now that you've started to kind of juggle that feeling of doing the documentary and being, I think in this film, an even more prominent subject in the film than maybe you were in Lebanese Burger Mafia. I think that you were kind of the gateway into the lives of all these different people. And I think that you were more kind of from the outside talking to them, what they're doing. I think this time there's some more personal stakes like you just talked about before. For you, was it even more important to have the input of those people around you? Like, let's say, for example, Tamara Lessard, your cinematographer, and also Sarah Taylor, who was your editor on Lebanese Burger Mafia. Are people like that even more vital in this kind of process when you're juggling even more balls, it feels?
Oh, my God. Yes, certainly to the cinematographer. You know, in a lot of ways, Tamara, I think, was co-directing this film. I underestimated how difficult it would be to direct and star in a film, basically, right? This movie also is done in the style of an observational documentary, a cinema verite. So once we were in the scene, I really wanted to stay in the scene, and I didn't want to sort of like break any walls there. Have those conversations very naturally, let them play through, just go with the flow. I mean, there were sometimes an hour would go by where I was just in front of the camera, just like any other subject being watched, before I would actually like interact with my crew. And I was just interacting with my subjects. So, you know, with in that kind of environment, your cinematographer is really kind of running the show in a technical sense. So, I'll do the best that I can to communicate the vision that I want. You know, we will look at a few angles and frames. But once we get rolling, I'm actually trying really hard not to give any direction to the crew, because my focus is just on acting the part. Acting the part, being the part, I guess.
Wrestling and anything that you do, it doesn't actually like owe you anything. Mm. Wrestling's given me everything that I've got, and wrestling's given me all these opportunities.
It's never about putting people down. It's always just about building people up. Your first match is gonna be like some memorable night.
Not a wife anymore. No, we just separated.
You've been wrestling.
It's the hardest thing I've ever done. It's
really?
It's physically the hardest thing I've ever done. Emotionally, it's in the top five.
Sometimes I find more satisfaction in getting booed. There's something about putting on that gear and going out.
That's
like a different
maybe even another level of direction for you, is that fact that, you know, inadvertently in some ways, in being yourself, you're kind of leading people through that process of being comfortable on camera and not worrying about those things, because it would read way too much if you were too worried about, you know, what shot is happening, or if you're trying to like, you know, we got to reset something up. You have to put so much trust in the community of people that are around you making that film. But that was one thing I kind of thought about while you were just saying that, is I'm like inadvertently you're kind of directing the scene silently by just trying to be yourself and let these people open up with you. Cause the more they connect, the more that you're going to get on film.
And I'm sort of leading the scene in some directions in a very purposeful way. I mean, one thing that sort of a theme that's living under the surface of this movie is about, you know, as I talked about, this whole concept of kayfabe, which is sort of this like social contract between the audience and the wrestlers, that, you know, we're just gonna pretend like everything here is real. We're gonna react to it like it's real. I would say that, you know, documentaries have an element of kayfabe to them. Certainly in, you know, docuseries like reality shows have that. When you put the camera in front of someone, they cease to be their natural selves. They become a bit of a, you know, a performative version of themselves. In this movie, actually, I would say the most organic, natural, completely like unaffected parts of the movie are ironically the wrestling matches. Because if you were to remove those cameras, the wrestling matches would play out exactly as they do in front of that live audience. But for everything else, the dynamic completely changes. People themselves become a slightly more amplified or, you know, different version of themselves. And then when you have, you know, someone like myself who is the writer of this film and I'm writing it by performing in it, there's also an element of improv as well. And I would say that sort of like improvisation is in a way how I was directing the film.
We're speaking on Moving Radio today about Making Kayfabe. You can stream it on CBC Gem right now. One of the things that we kind of dabbled in a little bit, but I think we should drill down a little bit deeper on is love wrestling itself, because of course it is a central figure within this documentary. But for anybody that doesn't know much about it, let's get into a little bit more details of, you know, what actually drew you to them as to be like, because you said yourself, like there's about five different companies around, like what made you get engaged with them? Or you're like, I asked all five. They were the only ones that said yes. I don't know. Maybe that was what it was.
You know what? Okay. That's kind of what it was. It's kind of what it was. So I wanted Love Wrestling to be one of several promotions that were spotlighted in this film. Initially, this film was going to be less about the lives of the wrestlers and more about the culture of wrestling in Edmonton. You know, I still plan to transform into a wrestler and that be sort of like the through line for it. But the focus was going to be more on sort of the history and the culture of wrestling and why it's so vibrant in Edmonton. But what I underestimated was the sort of the politics between the local companies and, might I say, some of the pettiness between them as well. That doesn't apply to Love Pro. You know, I think, you know, it's Love Pro was started in 2021 by Spencer Love. It is, and it was started as, you know, with sort of a bit of a mission statement of like no douchebags, being very, very inclusive, very sort of LGBTQ friendly. You know, there's a lot of sexism in wrestling. And I think that they put a big emphasis on their female wrestlers, and they do intergender wrestling. So they were always game with participating in this one, in this film. But they're also sort of seen as, I think, a bit of a threat because they've had so much success so quickly. I mean, they're selling out their shows. And so, yeah, I was supposed to train with another promotion and another trainer. And they tried to play hardball and said, well, if Love Pro is a part of it, we're not going to be a part of it. And I think that I'm just guessing, I think that the intended effect was for me to drop Love Pro from the film, but that, you know, homie don't play that, right? Like I wanted to actually, I really was adamant on making this sort of like fair to all the different companies. But what ended up happening is that sort of hardball, that ultimatum kind of backfired a little bit. And then one of the other promotions or two of the other promotions didn't want to be a part of it. One for, I don't know, other reasons, let's just say. And, that kind of just left me with Love Pro Wrestling. And in the end, it was the best thing that could happen for this movie. In fact, you know, I look at my original vision now, and I just see all the flaws with the whole concept of it. It, yeah, you know, Edmonton has a thriving pro wrestling scene, but I don't think that's as compelling actually as getting sort of up close and personal with the wrestlers themselves. That's a much more compelling story. And so by losing that kind of, you know, that kind of like perspective or that context for it, we're actually able to get much closer with the wrestlers because there's only so much time, you know, when you're doing an hour of television. And then the other thing is that, you know, Love's culture of inclusivity and positivity is the environment I needed to do this successfully. I think that environment set me up for success. And honestly, I'm not sure. I mean, I can't speak to how it would have, I don't have a comparison, but it's hard for me to imagine it's hard for me to imagine succeeding in an environment that wasn't as positive and supportive as the one that they have set up.
The weird thing is when you say that, I'm like, well, this makes total sense. Like, the history of wrestling in a lot of ways came down to territories fighting with each other. And then it ended up being big companies who are like, oh, we hate the millionaire.
Yes.
You're going to be a billionaire soon. So, and you're going to swallow up this company. And even that TV series Heels was all about that, right? Like,
yeah,
the tiny company versus that. If anybody saw that,
it doesn't have to be that way, though.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't surprise me, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at how, like, you know, AEW is a great example of how a wrestling promotion can actually both contribute to and benefit from the mixing, the sort of like overlapping with other wrestling promotions. Because what they do is when they tour Canada or the United States, they actually do this kind of like development program where they find local wrestlers or they invite local wrestlers to come fight an AEW show, which is kind of amazing. And it's an incredible opportunity for exposure for those local wrestlers. And it also like kind of helps, you know, feed that pipeline into AEW as like, you know, the destination for the rare wrestling star that might come out of one of these, you know, region like local wrestling promotions. And the other thing is, like, you talked about how, you know, this is sort of a nod to the origins of wrestling as being very territorial. I would actually say that wrestling's become like even more hyper-local, like less territorial, because you don't really have like kind of like Stampede Wrestling where they're covering just like Alberta and kind of Western Canada. They're the Western Canadian territory. When you have like five promotions in Edmonton, a few more in Calgary, you know, a few in Winnipeg, a few in Vancouver, maybe one in Victoria, can't remember. There's not really like, it doesn't make sense to try to like cover some sort of territory. You have to sort of feed off of each other because you're all part of the same ecosystem. You don't really have a choice.
We're speaking on Moving Radio today with Omar Malouel, and we're talking about the film that he directed and produced. It's called Making Kayfabe. You can see it right now on CBC Gem. Check it out for free. I'm sure they've been a great partner to work with because you also did that as well with the precursor to Lebanese Burger Mafia before it was a full-length film. So, you know, kudos to them for continuing to support Canadian artists and making it highly accessible for people. I don't care what people complain about. There's a lot of good content on there.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're part of it. You're part of it. You can put down your rosy now, Omar. Okay, I got it.
Just spinning my rosy on my middle finger here.
Okay, so let's kind of get back before we kind of wrap this up to Lebanese Burger Mafia. What's amazing is when you made that announcement a little while ago is that, you know, you had been able to broker a deal, or at least, you know, your distribution company had been able to do that with Paramount Plus and get that film to an even broader audience, which is incredible. Because I know how successful it was here. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, the Paramount Plus, how people can access it potentially, and maybe how people should access it.
Yeah, thanks for bringing this up. I mean, it's been a hell of a wild ride with that movie, right? I mean, it started just the way The Making of Kayfabe did, as a, you know, 1 hour documentary, technically 45 minutes, technically 44 minutes. Just, we knew that the excitement for this movie about Burger Baron, that the sort of the super fandom was, yeah, I mean, we could just see it before it even came out. And we had so much more story to tell, far more than we could fit in 45 minutes. So we did this feature film. Somehow we raised another 100 grand to do it. And I knew that it would be successful in Alberta. And I knew that it could find a audience. I never imagined that it would find the audience that it did, as such a wide audience. I mean, it had a theatrical release, incredibly. You know, that is like such an honor and such a testament, I think, to like the transcending kind of themes of this movie, which on the surface is just about a fast food chain. And Level Film, they were wonderful. They bought the movie at Hot Docs, which is where it had its world premiere, and they brokered this deal with Paramount Plus, which has been mostly great. We have had a technical issue. You know, it goes to show, I guess, that there's always sort of like bumps in the road, even with a movie that I think its success has far exceeded my expectations. There are still challenges. The challenge we're dealing with right now is that for some reason, if you watch our movie on Paramount Plus, the subs channel, not like if you are directly signed up for Paramount Plus and you have the app on your smart TV, the P Plus app, no issues. If you access it through Prime or also I'm hearing now through like Apple TV subs, there is this audio mix problem where the music is so loud. It's almost like it's twice as loud or three times as loud as it should be. So loud that it overpowers the dialogue. You can't really hear the dialogue. The music is a very important part of this movie. The score by Ashraf El-Assali is this like folk Arabic music score that he composed. It's really wonderful, but it's not so great that it's the only thing we want you to hear. You know, like, we can hook you up with the soundtrack if you love it that much, but this movie's not a soundtrack. So if you are a Paramount Plus subscriber through Prime or one of the subs channels, you can watch it on a laptop. I know that's not ideal, but if you watch it on a laptop, you don't have that audio problem. If you watch it on like a tablet app or a phone app, you don't have that problem. Try casting it to your TV. Try plugging your laptop into your TV with an HDMI. But ideally, just use the Paramount Plus app itself to sign in, if you can do that, or rent it from VOD, you know. So
okay, well, the way to see it. Those are two great options. Look, because I have some, you know, some people might say sad, desperate connection to physical things. Do you think Level might ever get out there and put out maybe even like a limited run of some Blu-rays? Would be amazing, because I
Wouldn't
think you've got a bunch of stuff on there. I'm going to assume you've asked about this already. I'm not going to press the buttons.
But you know what?
Maybe, is there hope?
I didn't ask about it, but Level did bring it up once upon a time. And maybe it could still happen. I don't know. I would love that as well. And if they won't do it, then maybe they'll just give me permission to do it, and I'll craft something up, sell them on the streets, sell them at Burger Baron's.
Oh my God, that would be perfect. The film that we've been talking about, we talked about Lebanese Burger Mafia, because it's an amazing piece too. So it was Digging in the Dirt. You can find that as well. Is that still on Gem? Is that right?
You know, I don't think it.
It might not be more. Right?
No, it is until September.
Okay. But get that fast too. You can check it out. Right. And then you want to triple dip here by watching what we've
triple
been
dip.
Talking about. Yeah, that's right. Is Making Kayfabe. Maybe triple H-ing it. I don't know. Is that even a thing?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Triple H it. You know what? You can watch all three of my films.
Yes.
Or you can watch Dune 2 in the same time. So I think you should watch all three of my films. It's just more story. It's more story.
More value, right?
Yeah.
And your
special effects are obviously going to be better in my movies.
That's right. I want to see your popcorn container. That's what I'm looking for.
You mean that literally? Because I do have a limited edition.
Oh, Burger Baron one?
No, it's an Avatar Way of the Water bucket.
Oh, okay. Well, I was hoping you'd have one for your film, but I don't know. Did you see the Dune one?
No, I didn't.
Oh, well, you look that up afterwards.
Gotta go get that.
People in the audience are getting it now, and then you'll be like, what the hell is this? That was, I went too inside baseball. I'm sorry. I went too inside. And you know what? While you're at it, pick up Praying to the West. That's a book.
Thanks.
Also, so you read that, you know, as you kind of lull yourself to sleep as well.
I'm going to shout out two movies from Backroad Productions. That's Backroad is the company, is a studio that produced Lebanese Burger Mafia and Making Kayfabe, and they've had a great year. They have a movie out now called Hey Victor.
Hilarious. Oh, I just saw the premiere.
I'm going to see it tonight, in fact.
I've seen it twice, a Saturday EIF.
Awesome. Fantastic. Awesome. And go track down Hands That Bind, another movie that they put out in the last year. So congratulations to Blake McWilliam and Dylan on their success.
Yeah.
They've had a great year.
I agree too. All right. Well, it's always fantastic to talk to you. We've shamelessly promoted a lot of stuff. Here's your last chance. If there's anything else out there that you need people to check out to find out more about you or your work, the upcoming work, whatever it might be, what's the best way that people can find out more about what you're up to?
You can just go to my website, omarmoualem.com, omarmoualem.com.
Omar Moualem has been our guest today on Moving Radio. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Love the film. I have a bad feeling I could have wasted at least another hour of your time as we talked about your personal life and wrestling and how it intertwined. So I appreciate that you even gave me this amount of time, sir.
Oh, thank you. It's always a pleasure, man. Hope I see you around.